Earlier this week, Attorney General Eric Holder told the European Parliament that the Obama administration will try to close the U.S. detention center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, before next year's election, despite pressure from Republicans like presidential candidate Rick Perry to keep it open. Closing Guantanamo was an Obama campaign promise, but the president hasn't been able to keep it, in part because his plan to try the 9/11 suspects in U.S. criminal courts failed. They're to be tried by American military commissions at the center. So much has been written and said about Guantanamo, but an award-winning book relies on images, pictures of the detainees' cells, the living quarters for the American military personnel at the base, and the homes detainees returned to after they were released. It's called Guantanamo, If the Lights Go Out, a reference to something one of the former detainees said, that if the lights go out at home, where he lives now, he feels like he's back in his cell. You can see some of the pictures at herenow.org. They were taken by Edmund Clark, who was just awarded the Hood Medal by the Royal Photographic Society of London. It's an honor that recognizes photography as a public service. If the Light Goes Out also received Best Book honors in the New York Photo Awards and the International Photography Awards. So today we revisit our conversation with Edmund Clark from earlier this year. So I'm looking at pictures of Gitmo. Here's a glimpse through glass of a man in a cell. He almost looks like a supermarket display case. Then there's pictures of the homes some released detainees live in now. Here's a single bed with a flower throw and a pillow that says, "Welcome home, Omar." And pictures of the American base in Cuba. Here's a wooden cubby with, you know, military hats, like a school kid's cubby, you know. What's the purpose behind this? What were you exploring?
Well, the starting point for the work were the homes of ex-detainees, the places where they're living now after they've been released. And the reason I wanted to go there was to contrast the ordinariness of their homes with the demonized representations and the dehumanized experience that they had been through. I mean, everything I had read and seen about Guantanamo just dehumanized everyone, both the detainees and the military involved with detaining them in the prison camps. So in a sense, what I wanted to do was to explore a shared experience of personal space. I mean, no matter who we are or where we come from or what we believe in, we all have an experience of a place to eat and sleep and wash. And that then led me to want to go to Guantanamo to look at two things. Obviously, to look at the spaces that these men had called home while they were in the prison camps, but also to look at the American experience of Guantanamo Bay, to look at the rooms that were home to the guards in the detainee camps, but also the communal spaces where the American community live on the naval base, because it is the biggest and the oldest naval base outside America. So in a sense, it's small town America that has grown up.
Well, in a funny way too, you remind us that our status as humans really is almost defined by our borders, you know, the room that we're in, so that when you're a detainee and you're in that small enclosure, that defines who you are. And if you get to live on the base, that defines who you are. But everybody, in a funny way, is detained.
I think that's true, yes. I mean, that touches on another element, what I'm trying to explore, which is that idea of memory and looking at the legacy that the kind of experience these men have gone through now has on them once they're trying to recover. But also the spaces that I'm photographing in people's homes would be the spaces that they would be remembering that punctuated their memories while they're in the prison camps. So kind of that idea of regaining control over their lives, regaining a sense of who they are and what they can do is key to what I was trying to look at.
Well, and I'm flipping through the pictures. Oh, here's one of two overstuffed armchairs with doilies, you know, on the headrest, kind of facing each other with a lace curtain. Obviously, someone's home. You flip the page. There are steel picnic tables in the middle of what looks like maybe a community area in the prison in Guantanamo Bay. Oh, there, you flip the page. There's Adirondack chairs lined up facing what looks to be sort of a shrine. What is that?
That's on the naval base. That's a shrine to the Catholic saint of Cuba. You pick out very well the fact that when you go through the book, you jump from one space to another. And that's one thing which I've done very deliberately, is to mix up the images from these three spaces to try and convey a sense of dislocation and disorientation. Dislocation and disorientation, both in terms of the legacy of the experience of being at Guantanamo and coming to terms with it once you've been released, but also to try and say something about the process of control, which was key to everyday life in the prison camps.
Here's one that makes me feel a little bit unnerved, and yet it may be the most blasé, but it still feels unnerving. You're inside a space, you're looking out windows, so they appear to have bars over them, and there in the distance is Ronald McDonald.
Mm.
What is that?
Well, that again, that's an image from the naval base. That is the McDonald's restaurant on the naval base. And, you know, as I said, the naval base is small town America. It has fast food restaurants, bowling alleys, shopping mall, everything you'd expect to find in an American town. And that image, I mean, I was struck when I went into the McDonald's. I turned around and, you know, through the window, through the bars on the window, and through the fence surrounding him, there is McDonald, Ronald McDonald, in his own little cell. You know, he's kind of on this plinth surrounded by a very confined metal fence.
Well, they're all really quite provocative. And as you said, you started by going into the homes of the former detainees. So how did you gain entree to the homes?
Yes, I went to their homes to begin with. I gained access to them through their lawyers. One particular lawyer in the UK who had represented quite a few of the British detainees in Guantanamo explained what I was trying to do, showed him some previous work I had done around confinement. And through a very slow process, gradually got to meet more and more detainees and explained what I was trying to do. And the fact that I didn't want to photograph them, that I didn't want to interview them, that I really just wanted to look at their spaces, in a sense to kind of rehumanize them through their personal spaces, through their homes, I think led them to take on board what I was trying to do and to cooperate with me and give me access.
Well, one of the former detainees you speak with is Omar Degayez, who was arrested in Pakistan in 2002 after spending time in Afghanistan, sent to Guantanamo, held there until his release in 2007, I believe without charges. And I mentioned the photograph of the single bed with the flower spread and the green pillow that says, "Welcome home, Omar." That's his. And here he is talking to the BBC about that picture of his room at his home in England.
I chose one of the smallest rooms in it. It wasn't always my bedroom. I don't know why. Since my imprisonment, I felt more comfortable sleeping in a very, very small room. And it felt more like the cell. So I must have felt more comfortable living in something which was similar to a cell.
He alleges that he was abused by guards while he was in the prisons. But Omar Degayez also started receiving mail from supporters, and you included some of that in here.
Yes, they're fascinating because they represent the kind of decisions people made around the world in terms of images and messages to send to a man in a cell they'd never met.
I'm looking at some of them now. There's picture postcards, a lot of handwritten notes. "Dear Omar, greetings from Ireland. Our thoughts are with you. Good wishes from Ireland. People in Ireland are working hard to ensure you are treated justly." Others are from kids. And that became a part of his living space.
The material he received had kind of a double edge to it. On the one hand, he tells me that it protected him because his immediate guards realized so many people were aware of where he was. But because he received so much material, and because some of it was quite strange, he thought it was his interrogators. In many cases, it was his interrogators just playing with his mind, and it actually, the result was it increased his paranoia. So there was kind of two edges to the material he got.